You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the world of horse racing every weekday. It is Friday, November the 27th, and it's a promising looking morning at the moment. It's quite hard to tell how it's going to play out, but I'm off to Newbury. There is a shower or two forecast, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed it stays dry. It's the first day of their winter carnival, their Ladbrokes Winter Carnival. It's the Ladbrokes Trophy tomorrow. So much to enjoy here and in Ireland and across the globe over the next few days. And later in this edition, we will be hearing from James Willoughby about a truly meaningful and potentially pulsating clash of three Triple Crown winners in the Japan Cup. But back closer to home, we'll be talking about the jumping at Newbury and Ferry House in due course. But first, we must take stock of what the government's new tiered restriction system means for horse racing. In a moment, I'll be talking to Jonjo Sanderson, who's the chief executive of Wetherby Racecourse, which is in Tier 3, so the most severe restriction zone. But he's also involved with Catterick Racecourse, which is half an hour away and is in Tier 2. So it'll be interesting to see what he says about those tracks. But first, Cornelius Lysett, just bring us up to speed with exactly how this impacts on horse racing.
So the numbers out from the Racecourse Association talk about 35 racecourses in Tier 2 and 16 in Tier 3, though in their detail they have given all the flat racecourses as well, so the numbers aren't quite as big as that. It means that racing will be resuming mid next week, because on Wednesday, after the lockdown in England ends, racing is scheduled for Haydock and Kempton and Ludlow and Lingfield. So the 12 o'clock at Lingfield will have an historic feel to it. I think it's particularly pleasing that Ludlow is in there, because whereas Haydock and Kempton are part of the Jockey Club group and Lingfield Arc, Ludlow is one of those racecourses which row their own boat, the Independents, and the Independents have particularly taken a hit. So racing is back with spectators. Well, remember, we're not talking an enormous amount of spectators. The maximum number in Tier 2 is 2,000. And the exact detail of how that will work is yet to be entirely established with the Racecourse Association and with the ROA, the Racehorse Owners Association, because clearly those numbers will include owners as well as paying crowds. So sometimes kind of balance has got to be done. I think we're in a situation now where, and obviously I don't mean war literally, the war, the battle to return has been won, and now the peace has got to be sorted out as well.
Well, Jonjo Sanderson is the chief executive of Wetherby Racecourse, which is in Tier 3, so the most stringent tier in England. He's also involved with the management group that runs Catterick, which is in Tier 2, but not that far away from Wetherby, and Thirsk and Redcar, who will be racing deeper into next spring and summer. So that remains to be seen how it plays out for them. But most pertinently, Jonjo, with big Christmas fixtures at Wetherby, you're in Tier 3, which is the most restrictive. Is that a big disappointment to you and your team?
Well, let's first say we're delighted that, you know, crowds are coming back to sports and obviously racing from our point of view. As far as Christmas goes, it's disappointing that whilst there are crowds allowed to come back to racecourses, Wetherby has been assigned Tier 3. I'm not shocked, Nick, if I'm honest with you. We were heading into Tier 3 when the national lockdown came into play at the beginning of November and then was superseded by the lockdown anyway, so I wasn't expecting to go into Tier 2. I thought Leeds would have had to have a miracle to have gone into Tier 2 when they announced everything yesterday. So whilst I'm disappointed we're not going to see crowds at Christmas, I'm not shocked. And we'll just see how we play on. I mean, it gets slightly more complicated going forward now if there's a review every week, if I'm honest with you.
Because that's the point. These racecourses need to know where they stand, presumably for staffing and having made use of the furlough scheme and so on and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a challenge if you're in a three or And then in a fortnight's time, I mean, from our point of view, so we race on the 26th of December and the 27th. So the first review comes on the 16th of December. I presume, you know, I don't study politics particularly, but it won't be an overnight implementation. It'll be 3 or 4 days later. So let's say it's the weekend. So then we've got basically 4 working days notice to sort of gear everything up. And then you chuck Christmas in the middle of it and then we're racing. So it'll be an operational challenge, to mobilize everything that we need to mobilize if we suddenly drop from tier 3 to tier 2 in the middle of December.
If you're a tier 2 racecourse, like Catterick, which you're involved with is, for example, do you feel an obligation then to welcome crowds back because you can?
Our ultimate end game throughout this whole 7 or 8 months has been to push to get crowds back on course. What we've always said, and I think it was brought out when the pilot schemes were run at Warwick and Doncaster, is that they were staged, they were uneconomical to stage them. And I think looking at the numbers that we're dealing with, 2,000 is the headline act, but the reality is it's not 2,000 people at all. It's a few hundred people in Catterick's case, probably. We haven't quite finished the calculations yet, but we're talking 700 or 800 people maximum, and Weatherby won't be dissimilar when we drop into tier 2. So, but you've got to bear in mind that you've still got to section off your green zone. So you need all those sort of barriers and the safe zones in place. You need added security. You need added medical provision. You need added cleaning provision. Then you've got to think about how you cater for all that. And all that comes at a cost. So the return of crowns is fantastic, but it's not the golden egg that everyone thinks it may well be. It's going to be borderline break even at best, I would suggest, in the first instance when we're talking about those sort of numbers.
Yeah, I suppose this is what I was getting at. So even if you were to make a slight loss on fixtures because it's costing you so much to put a meeting on with these stringent protocols in place, do you then still feel some sort of obligation in the longer term to do it because you want to retain the loyalty of your fans as and when you do become profitable again, and because you've been campaigning for so long to get crowds on the track? So you almost have to bite the bullet, if you like.
Absolutely. I think that's the case. I mean, unless you know, everyone will be doing their budgets, and unless the budgets are coming out at, you know, several thousands loss or tens of thousands of a loss, then that's for the individual boards of directors or groups, if it's ARC and Jockey Club, to make their decision. But if you're talking, you know, break even or moderate loss, I think absolutely. We want to welcome crowds back because that's ultimately our end game. If we have that opportunity now, we choose not to, then I don't know what sort of message that sends back to government and local authority.
Yeah, I think that's an extremely good point. Just finally, before I let you go, and thank you for talking to me at some unearthly hour of the morning, just as regards the £40 million that the government has made available to racecourses across Britain, and some racecourses have been a little bit uneasy about this because of the loan repayments that they then might have to pay back. What's your position on that?
I don't know, Nick, because actually, apart from seeing the headline figure of £40 million, we've had absolutely no detail of what the loan repayments are, what the interest rate is, whether there's an arrangement fee, lots of unanswered questions. It's no one in racing's fault. I mean, I think racing is still waiting to hear a bit more detail from DCMS, as far as I can understand. So until we can see the devil in the detail as to what are the connotations behind that £40 million, I don't really know. But, you know, the last time we were offered loans from a government organisation, i.e. the levy board, at the beginning of this pandemic, there was a 4% interest rate charge on those loans. So I can't see, you know, this is one government department no different to another. So if it's coming with that sort of commercial agreement tied to it, then I wouldn't have thought the uptake will be dramatically high, which again is a strange position for racing to be in, given that, you know, we've presented our case with all sports to race it, to the government, saying we need help, and yet the obligations are, you know, pretty draconian, because you can go and borrow money from the high street for less.
Jonjo, I really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much, and I've certainly learned a little bit more than I knew at the beginning of this interview, so appreciate it, and best of luck for the next couple of months, however tricky they might be.
Thanks, Nick. Take care.
Jonjo Sanderson there. Cornelius Lysett is still with me, and I thought, Cornelius, that quite neatly encapsulated some of the issues and problems and dilemmas facing racecourse managers right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think on a point of detail, he talked there about reviews and weekly reviews. I think the next review, the data came up with, is absolutely right. But I think you know, the way this has worked, I think everyone realizes that notice is required. So notice has been given with this latest information from the government. So that's not necessarily a massive issue, but it is complicated. I love that expression from John Joe Sanderson. It's not necessarily the golden egg. It's not quite as straightforward as just get people in and take the money as they come through the gate. In fact, you don't take that. That's one point to make, is that you can't turn up and pay and go in. You've got to have done it in advance. But it's not going to be straightforward. The race courses have got to sort things out. The owners have got to sort things out. And the very fact that John Joe points out, and this struck me as well, that headline from the Treasury of £40 million in loans are going to be available from racing, and still we don't actually know what's going on. I was lucky enough to be sitting in on your programme on Racing TV on Sunday morning, and Nick Rust was a guest, and I think he was anticipating a bit more detail Monday or Tuesday of this week. So it's an ongoing process, but I suppose we are living in the middle of the most strange and mysterious incident that's going to happen in most of our lifetimes. Well, let's hope so anyway. So it is sort of just a tiny bit more complicated than it otherwise would be. There's one update which our Cornish listeners may be interested in. There's a point-to-point scheduled for Wadebridge in Cornwall on December the 6th. So I did contact the organisers and say, you must be rubbing your hands saying we'll get some people in for this. But there's another event going on at the same, roughly the same location on the same day. So it's not going to be practical to have crowds. So that will still be behind closed doors, the point-to-point in Cornwall on December the 6th. And just another, and I don't mean to be flippant, but it made me smile when I looked at the fact that Haydock would be returning to action early on the first day. When I was at the BBC, as part of Lord Reith's mission to inform, educate and entertain the listener, I used to love going to a race course and giving some geographical reference, you know, Goodwood high above the cathedral city of Chichester on the Downs, Chester squeezed in between the ancient walls of the city of Chester and the River Dee, and Haydock, I always used to say, just nestling on the side of the M6 in Merseyside. And aficionados of Haydock, you said, no, not Merseyside, it's Lancashire. Well, it's worth noting that Lancashire is in Tier 3, so there would be no crowds at Haydock. But because Merseyside is in Tier 2, crowds are available at Haydock. So geography sometimes comes back in your favour.
And another point we should note, which we touched on earlier in the week, is that Wales and Scotland, the assemblies there, the devolved governments in Edinburgh and Cardiff, have different regimes in place to measure levels of coronavirus, and their racecourses haven't been opened up to spectators. And yeah. I think there were a few, I'll put it this way, thinly veiled ideas of moving the Welsh National, which I got into trouble for airing on Twitter.
But well, I saw
only,
you.
It was only on Intelligence. On yeah, it was only on Intelligence, Cornelius, but yeah, there is no great feeling from the Welsh public to have the race moved to England, even if it means they can't go to Chepstow.
No, it is worth actually noting that if you do go racing in Wales at the moment, in whatever capacity, as an owner, if your tier is Tier 3 where you live, it could be difficult to get in. I know that that the postcodes are taken, etc. So it's worth checking all of that sort of thing. But yeah, it just shows the devolved government, which some people like and some people don't like, different rules apply. So different rules at Chepstow and Forslass and Bangor and around the five Scottish courses as well.
Right, enough tears. tears of a different kind for jockey Alexander Thorne, who failed to have his 21-day suspension overturned by the BHA's independent appeals panel yesterday for failing to weigh in on a horse at Taunton 10 days ago, and that horse was disqualified.
Yeah, I think there'll be considerable surprise and disappointment at the results. So the statutory ban is for 3 weeks. His case was basically that these were exceptional circumstances, the changing rooms have moved, the weighing in procedures have altered as far as the geography of Taunton was concerned. So 21 days, basically they asked for the discretion to be employed to perhaps look at reducing the 21 days. And I'm a big supporter of Timothy Belgian QC, who was the head of the panel that heard this appeal, saying that he and his colleagues, this is quoting from the Racing Post, had not found anything approaching exceptional circumstances. Well, to be perfectly honest, I don't want to sound flippant. What more could be described as exceptional circumstances than the situation that we now find themselves in, ourselves in? He said that the panel found itself in sympathy with the £5 claimer. Well, I think there isn't a person involved in horse racing in Britain and Ireland, and indeed around the world who listen to this, who've not heard this story, who didn't think, well, obviously he should have weighed in, but obviously there are certain circumstances, so surely there was a strong case to reduce the number of days. So there'll be a great deal of sympathy for Alex Thorne, who I'm sure now, just wants to get it out of it, get out of the headlines, get it out of his own mind, serve his ban, and come back and ride a lot of winners for Alan King and others in the weeks ahead. And there'll be plenty of people who will want to support him.
So much to look forward to over the next two or three days in England and in Ireland. Cornelius, both you and I will be concentrating primarily on Newbury today and tomorrow. I mean, so many highlights to choose from. They've got this winter festival into 2 days just about right now, I think.
Yeah, it was 3 days for a time. Personally, I loved it when it was 3 days because it meant 3 days at Newbury, 3 days hopefully quite often with a bit of autumn sunshine, and 3 days of decent racing. But just looking at some of the stuff that's coming up, Flinter Sacra, but Sprinter Sacra's brother, a lot of people very keen on him. That novice chase coming up at 150 is invariably informative. But the long distance hurdle, which I think is the 3 o'clock, is a really, really good race. Paisley Park is there as a former champion who didn't win the Cheltenham Stayers last year, but is said to be back and in rude health ahead of this season. But people have looked around and they've wondered about Paisley Park, and they think they've got quite a nice horse. So all sorts of owners and trainers are going to have a go, and we've got this big field of fascinating horses. I see Pricewise in the Racing Post, not surprised, he's keen on Time Hill, who's running there. I'm personally very keen on Honest Vic, who's a 10-1 shot today and 50-1 for the Stairs Hurdle at Cheltenham at the moment, trained by Henry Daly, a horse very, very much on the up. Won a handicap hurdle at Kempton last Christmas, ran really well at the festival, just out of the first four in the race that it took part in, and then a winner at Cheltenham the other day in great style, runs for Henry's mum and cousin and uncle. So he'll be very keen to do well for them. And I think Honest Vic is one of several contenders that look really interesting against Paisley Park. Sam Spinner's in there as well, who's a great favourite. But the vibes about Paisley Park, have you detected this? They're pretty strong that he's back and he's in good shape.
Well, he was one of the nation's favourite racehorses 2 seasons ago, and last season, until his mishap at the Cheltenham Festival when he didn't run so well and was found to have a fibrillating heart. If he's back on point, he should take all the beating. That is this afternoon. And tomorrow, of course, the feature race is the Ladbrokes Trophy at Newbury. One of the horses who's a firm favourite of many now is Regal Encore, who's run really well in the Ladbrokes Trophy before, and he comes into the race in fantastic form, having won his traditional race at Ascot last time. He might be old, but he's young at heart, and he's trained by Anthony Honeyball. And I don't know if Anthony's on him now, but I can hear you riding out, Ant.
Yeah, I'm on You Can Have It at the moment.
And she's a pretty smart man.
Yeah, she is. She blew out a little bit at Cheltenham, ran a bit keen, and sort of just did too much in front, and then emptied out. But she was coming back quite quickly after a win, so hopefully we'll go for maiden hurdle now, so should be okay.
And how and where is Regal Encore at the moment?
Yeah, he's in good order. I mean, we weren't actually that confident going into Ascot, but he'd been a bit slack leading into it. But anyway, I mean, he put on a PB there, really. I mean, it was a very good run, and we are very happy with him going into this run, and he schooled nicely yesterday, so all set for the Ladbrokes.
I said he's old, but he's young at heart. He seems to be getting better. Is that possible?
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably not, is it really? When you start to look at the numbers and the handicap rating, I think he can't be getting better. But but he does seem to be, yeah, he's won two of his last, I don't know, three or four runs, and you know, in these handicaps around Ascot, so obviously he does well around there. But he does seem to be, yeah, the other thing is, he does seem to be coping with softer ground, which I know we're not going to get in the lab, but I wouldn't think it'd be massively against him, the ground, but it just, he does seem to be coping with more cut in the ground now, so... I don't know. I mean, you've seen 13-year-olds fighting it out in the Welsh National, haven't you? So perhaps that's a race he could go for at some point. But yeah, I don't know. He's been a cracking horse.
And would you still have the Grand National on your mind as the ultimate target?
Yes. Yeah. We will. I mean, we'll definitely have an entry in that. And so can we carry straight on, please? Can we go straight on? That's two. Yeah, we'll go straight on. Go straight on. That'd be his certainly be entered for that anyway. Yeah, and he's jumped around there beautifully twice and run well. So we'll be in there.
Listen, I can hear you giving your instructions to your string, and I know it's a busy work morning, but what else are you looking forward to this weekend?
Well, I mean, AC Milan would be interesting. It's a shame it's not softer ground. It is a little bit tilting at windmills, but he's got high class sort of bump form and some good run, you know, certainly a very good run over hurdles in that £100,000 race last season. So, and a great chasing debut at Aintree. So looking forward to him, win, lose or draw. I was looking forward to seeing him over fences again, really. Today we've got Sully Dock in a £30,000 handicap, and I'm looking forward to him as well. So always thought he'd want 2.5 miles and a bit better ground. So that's what we've got.
Ashley, thanks for talking to me. I will let you crack on, and looking forward to seeing all of them running this week.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. Thank you.
It's Friday, which means it is time for our weekly look at the Thoroughbred Racing Commentary Global Rankings. I will remind you of the top 10. First of all unchanged at 10, Monomoy Girl. She stays in training. She costs $9.5 million and she heads to the Saudi Cup. At 9, Authentic, the horse who won the Kentucky Derby and the Breeders' Cup Classic. At 8, Love, who reappears next season. 7, Sotsass, who's retired to Coolmore. 6, Magical, who heads to Hong Kong in a couple of weeks' time. Could it be a glorious swan song for her? Now it gets interesting for reasons we'll come to in a few moments' time. At 5, the Japanese mare Almond Eye. At 4, Tarnawa. We heard from Dermot Weld on this slot last week. 3 is Gayath, retired to Dali. 2 is Enable, munching away at the grass in Judmont's paddocks. And at number 1, Contrail, who is munching no grass. He is heading towards a big date with 2 of his star compatriots. And that could change everything as we welcome in James Willoughby. James, there is life in this race yet as we come to the dying embers of 2020.
I think you could fairly describe this race as the race of the year without any chance of being hyperbolic. This is an absolutely unbelievable race. 3 Triple Crown winners in the same contest.
So just tell us what the race is and where it's going to take place.
Sorry, the Japan Cup, which is over a mile and a half at Tokyo on Sunday, will take place in early morning our time. And it is a showdown between all of Japan's best horses in the same race.
Okay, so who have we got?
Well, and this is where TRC Global Rankings comes in. Contrail, the unbeaten 3-year-old Triple Crown winner amongst the colts, is the short price favourite. And here at TRC, we've taken a bit of a flack for the fact that he's currently our world number one racehorse above the likes of Enable and Gayath, and indeed his compatriot Almond Eye. But we need no more justification for this view than the betting. The betting markets, which are a very accurate guide to chances, are not based on what TRC Rankings thinks or anybody else, any other individual thinks, have Contrail at half the price of Almond Eye. Now, if you make your own world rankings, you'd have to have Almond Eye in the top 5, surely. She's a Japanese Triple Crown winner herself. She's won 8 Group 1s, including trotting up in Dubai. She's clearly one of the world's best thoroughbreds. But the betting market has it that Contrail is half the price of her for a reason. And that is after 6 brilliant wins, including 3 over the very disparate distances of the Japanese Triple Crown, he's proved himself to be in elite company. But can he do it here? I think this is a terrible spot for him myself.
Why so?
Well, if you were preparing a horse for a showdown with some of your country's best rivals, you would certainly not do so by prepping it over 1 mile 7 furlongs just a few weeks before the race, which is, of course, what Contrail had to go through. And that was his least impressive victory. He was a bit of a bedraggled sight in the closing stages, as he clearly didn't quite see out the two-mile trip. And I just think that that race would have probably set him back a fair bit. His trainer was quite candid about the fact he didn't expect him to physically bounce back from the race that quickly. And then he reported subsequently that, in fact, Kondrell had made a remarkable comeback in terms of his well-being. So hopefully he will be at his best, for he faces both Armandai, who's a brilliant mare, former winner of this race, but a host of other good horses too, including the Phillies Triple Crown winner, would you believe, Daring Tact. And this is probably the only race in the history of thoroughbred racing, I stand to be corrected if not, where three Triple Crown winners have served it up to each other. And the supporting cast, which is headed by Glory Vase, who won the Hong Kong International Vase really well and won really well in a Group 2 in his prep race for this, provide a stern test as well. We expect a full field of 18, fast ground, a strong pace, no place to hide, and it would be fabulous to see Kondrell prevail.
If Kondrell doesn't prevail and is defeated at the hands of either Armandai or Daring Tact, how might that impact upon these rankings?
Well, depending on how well Armandai wins and what rating she produces, I could easily see her going to number one, because TRC Global Rankings is a different way of looking at the form of racehorses. It's a better way, we think, because we take every run into consideration, build up a hierarchy of talent. And what matters in that hierarchy is the horses that are beaten, or defeated behind each particular individual. And if Almondi defeats two horses that we highly rate in terms of Kondrell and Daring Tact, as well as Glory Vase, then that will earn her a lot of ranking points, and that she will probably move towards the top of the classification. How high? I'm not sure. It depends on events. It depends on how well she wins. But this is the strongest race that we think there's been all year. Previously, we thought that was the Breeders' Cup Classic. But we weren't sure after the race there. A bit of a bunch finish and depended a bit on the run of the race. So it's a very, very exciting race. Wherever you are a horse racing fan, and I would suggest that if this race were run in the West, goodness me, the hyperbole that it would be attached to it, I think will be off the scale.
But as John Gosden correctly predicted, James, 10 years ago, the future is in the East.
They're very, very good at breeding horses, Nick. They're very clever in the stallions that they import. They breed for stamina almost exclusively. They do get sprinters, of course, but I just think they get so much right in their approach to breeding horses, and I don't think we've even seen the start of it. Japanese domination of global racing has been predicted now since the late 80s, and it hasn't really come to fruition, mainly because we really don't see that many challengers, and people tend to put too much weight in their results in the Arc de Triomphe, which is, after all, is run on a soft ground and not at the type of pace that we see in Japanese racing. But if you measure horses by the times that they achieve relative to other horses of known talent, then it's pretty obvious to anybody that Japanese racing is absolutely brilliant in terms of its quality. And the horses that rise to the top, like Almondi, like Kondrell, like Daring Tact, are very, very talented thoroughbreds indeed. And to see them in competition is going to be a complete thrill.
James, you teed it up so nicely for us. Anyone who hadn't been aware of what was going on early hours of Sunday morning, make sure you tune in, because the Japan Cup is set to be one of the most important races of the season globally. James, as ever, thanks so much.
Thanks, Nick.
Well, thanks to James and to all my guests this morning. Cornelius is still with me and he's going to send you home with a winner.
Well, I know Henry Daly is a listener to this on the way to the races, so I'm not going to ruin his journey by going for Honest Vic, but I'm really looking forward to seeing Honest Vic and Time Hill and Paisley Park, etc., in action today. But I was relieved to hear the top of the programme, and because I know all sorts of people, because of its success and your success, Nick, want to sponsor this, but the Fitstairs Club is still sponsored. So I was looking through the odds available from Fitstairs about one particular horse today. So Flinter Sacra is too short to back today. I think 11 to 4 on, something like that. However, there is a real feeling that he, if not quite Pegasus, then he's well on the way. That he's got a very, very big reputation at Seven Barrows. They see him going for the Supreme Novice Hurdle as their principal horse, assuming everything goes right between on the road to Cheltenham between now and March. He is currently 14 to 1 for the Supreme Novices Hurdle with Fitstairs, and I think that's a really interesting bet to have a go at. They're also even money that he'll win by four lengths or more today. That might be the bet for today.
Fantastic, Cornelius. Thank you so much. Thank you very much for listening as well. Have a great weekend. We will see you again on Monday. That was Friday, November the 27th. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.